Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 245, in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed, folks. We've got a great episode planned for you this week. If you've been living under a rock, you haven't heard of the new Kurt Cobain documentary, Kurt Cobain Montage of Heck. Let's see. Coming to HBO Monday, May 4th at 9 p.m. You can get it on HBO Go and everywhere else. It's also playing to a limited release in the theaters. And I think it's still playing here in Seattle, but not very many places. So you got to see it on HBO. You got to see it on HBO. Anyway. We've got Brett Morgan. Brett Morgan, the director of this film, is going to join us here shortly. I had the pleasure and the honor of going and meeting him at his hotel room at the Four Seasons in downtown Seattle and chatting him up for a little bit. And it's kind of an interesting story going into this chat, so we'll share that with you here in a little bit. We want to remind you, before we get started with everything here, we've got a live show, Air Raid, Live number 2, taking place at Naked City Brewery on June 20th. We have not yet released the tickets to this, so follow us at Facebook/ The Air Raid Podcast, and you'll find out right when they go out. Right when they go live, man. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. The lineup so far is amazing. And we're finalizing some little bits that will be coming your way. And we're doing it with the help of the good people at do206.com and also the wonderful, wonderful Mr. Kevin Sir over at Artist Home, who puts on Timberfest as well, man. And it's great to have those guys behind us and sponsoring the live show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And June 20th. Limited tickets, man. Limited tickets, because it's a smaller venue there at Naked City Brewery. And we'll let you know when those things go on sale. So follow us on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at AirRaidNet, and you'll find out right when they go out and you're able to buy them, because it sold out last year. This show sold out in like, I don't know, 2.5-3 weeks maybe. So you got to get on it, folks. You got to get on it. There's not very many tickets available. Okay, this episode. There's been a lot of talk lately in the news about press junkets, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? Press junket. Press junket is like a short interview. A lot of times you see these on TV, right, where the stars of some movie are sitting in front of like the poster of the movie that they're promoting, and then you see it on the news or on like Extra or, you know, all those shows, those entertainment movie shows, whatever. The press comes in, it's a line of press. These guys, the stars are sitting there for like 10, 12 hours answering pretty much the same questions over and over and over again. And each press person gets about like 7 minutes, right? To come in, answer or ask their questions, try to make it relevant, try to make it, different from the other people that have been coming in and asking the same exact questions. Try to make it fun, and then they're out. You know, 7 minutes is up, boom, you're done, get out. That's it, that's all you got. You could be mid-question, you'd have to leave, right? Well, it's been in the news lately because Robert Downey Jr. Had a little run-in with this guy, this press guy. I think he might be from London or something like that, I don't know. British, something, I didn't do a lot of research on this people. But he was asking some questions that, did not pertain to the movie, and Robert Downey got a little bit flustered, and he was like, you know what, this is done. I'm not going to sit through this. What are we doing here? I'm out. And he got up and he left, right? Well, so that had me a little bit nervous because, let me tell you about this. Okay, let's start from the beginning, shall we? I know this is going to be a totally disjointed story, and it doesn't make much sense, but that's how my stories go, right? So we were contacted maybe a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, asking if I and a plus one would like to go and see the documentary, special screening of the documentary, Kurt Cobain Montage of Heck, premiering at for one night only at the Cinerama here in Seattle. And I said, yes, of course, I would love to. HBO invited us to come do this thing. I mean, that's awesome, right? Yeah, how many times in your life does that happen? So, of course, I'm going to go and do that, right? And so I took my lovely wife, Mairead, and we went and we viewed the movie. By the way, the movie is amazing. It's fantastic. It's very manic. It's very depressing. But it's also filled with a lot of stuff that you never really knew about Kurt Cobain. And it's all about just Kurt Cobain. It's not really about Nirvana. It's not about the 90s. It's not about any of that stuff. It's about Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love and their relationship and how things really started falling apart for him, right? Because a lot of it is like home recordings, in which he like kept these audio diaries, which is amazing. And all this, like all these journal entries and everything like this, his artwork, which by the way, he was a really great artist as well. I don't know if I never knew that. I never knew that. It was an amazing insight into the mind of a musical genius and somebody that I and many, many other people have venerated for many years and created this like myth around, this legend around. And this definitely brings him back to being just a man, right? So anyway, we went and saw the movie and I really enjoyed it. It was very depressing. I wanted to come home and like hug my daughters as soon as possible, because it's very sad, of course. We all know how the story ends. So a couple days before the film, I was contacted again asking if maybe we wanted to interview the director. And I said, okay, yeah, that's great. Thinking that, you know, okay, they're going to give me 10 minutes or something like that, right? But no, she said she would give me 30 minutes and I could come down. We could do it in person. That's great because I don't like to do phoners a lot. And especially he was going to be in town for the screening and all that good stuff. And I was like, okay, this is awesome. This is great. And I was feeling very, very high horsey, right? I was really, I was really just full of myself. My ego was soaring because I was like, yeah, got invited to this thing by HBO out of the blue. And then I get invited to interview the director. That's going to be awesome too, because you know, who got to do that, right? Well, come to find out, everybody got to do that. Everybody in Seattle got to interview this director, because I was walking around. I saw some people that I knew at the screening and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm interviewing the director tomorrow. And me too. Yeah. Yeah. We've got him at this time. And I was like, oh shit, that's right before my time. Great. Don't go over your time, man. So anyway, I go down there and I'm starting to get nervous because I'm not doing press junkets here on this show, right? We don't do that. That's not what we really do on here on Air Raid. And I take pride in that. But I thought this would be a good one. And I spent all night like coming up with these amazing questions, right? I thought they were amazing. I really put some thought into it and stuff. And I was like, these are going to blow the director away. These questions are just going to blow this guy away. And these are fantastic. Nobody else is going to be asking these questions. I've got it locked down. This is going to be the best, the end all be all interview with the director, Brett Morgan, right? Oscar-nominated director Brett Morgan. By the way, you should see another documentary that he did, which is one of my favorites of all time. It's called The Kid Stays in the Picture. I believe that was the one he was nominated for an Oscar for. It's really fantastic, so go and check that out as well. Very talented man. So anyway, I make all these questions, right? I get down there. I show up on time. He's still talking with somebody. I think it was from the New York Times when I got down there. And I just sit there in silence, and listen to him basically answer all of the questions that I have written down. And I'm like, in my head, my inner monologue is going, shit. Ah, we got to come up with something else. We got to come up with a different angle, man. Oh my God. And then, so comes time to talk to him. And I'm just like, how you doing? I wasn't recording that part, but I tried to get in. I tried to make myself a human in front of him and tried to turn him into a human because he had been doing that for 12 hours, man, 12 hours. And we ended up having a really interesting conversation about doing press junkets, about the movie and about his psyche throughout this process. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. I know I did. It was fantastic. So, yeah, let's do this, shall we? Let's go with our first musical break. This is going to be a shorter interview. Like I said, we only had about 30 minutes with the guy, but it's a real conversation, man, and it's heavy. And he breaks down at one point. At one point, we were both crying, and I don't know if it actually transferred to the recording, but once we started talking about our own kids and how he hasn't been able to see his for a long time, man, that was some real shit. That was some real, real shit. So I'm hoping that this interview, you haven't heard this interview 12 times, but we'll see, right? You can email me at aaron@air-raid and tell me if you've heard the same interview with Brett Morgan over the course of the last 2 weeks. So there you go. Okay. Remember, live show coming up June 20th. Stay with us on Twitter at Air Raid Net and on Facebook there, and you'll find out when the tickets are coming. Okay, our first musical break. We're going to be featuring music from the band Nirvana for obvious reasons. In this week's episode, this song is called In Bloom, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Kids food where the changes moves stays here again rip the dark glass and the one who likes all our pretty songs and he likes to sing.
doing today differed from other movies that you've done in the past?
Well, this is personal. You know, it's emotional. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to, you know, you're doing a film about Robert Evans. I mean, you're not really going to break down in tears in an interview. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's. And yet, I think when I did The Kid, it was the only thing I ever was asked was about aesthetics.
Really?
Yeah. Nobody, you know, Bob did most of the press on the film, and when we did it, it was with film press, and we would talk about the sort of, you know, the after effects and stuff like that. So
yeah.
But you know, this film's personal. It's a very intimate movie, and yeah. so the interviews can get very emotional, and I'm, you know, sleep deprived. I've been on the road for 4 months. And having to field questions about Kirk and Francis, and you know, it's personal.
Have you felt like you've become somewhat of a spokesperson
No, man. I really am uncomfortable. I hate when people ask me about what Francis thought or interactions I've had with her.
Yeah.
I saw her at the LA premiere.
That was going to be my question. Do you feel uncomfortable being labeled as some sort of spokesperson?
Charlie Cross can do that. You know, I'm not taking on that role. Sure. I mean, I will do it now, and I will do any interview. I've yet to turn down a single interview request.
Yeah.
Because I feel responsibility.
Yeah.
That I had this amazing access. You know?
Right.
And, you know, some journalists are, you know, I feel, take advantage of that, you know? And, like, I had this one interview with this Australian guy when I was in Rome a couple weeks ago, and it was like a deposition. You know, and finally, I was like, that's it, man. You know, you've asked me, he couldn't get over what, like, something about the storage facility. He just wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
And I just, do you want to talk about the movie? What are you doing? He was like trying to get me to trip on my words.
Yeah.
I was just like,
what's the point of that?
I don't know. But I certainly that's not what I signed up for.
Right.
But at the same time, man, it's like, you know, I was there last night and I wasn't supposed to take questions from the audience. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I said, Jake, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's talk to them, man. I have nothing to hide, man. I just like, it's important that people understand who the author of this film is.
Right, right.
And what I was trying to achieve. Because it's Kurt Cobain. There's so much emotion swirling around it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a journalist asked me earlier what myths I was attempting to shatter. I said, none. When I went in there, there wasn't like I went in there going, I'm going to shatter the myth. I didn't know. Right. I didn't know what I was going to find.
Yeah. Well, people are still so steeped in the conspiracy theories. Like, I was just telling Ashley out in the hallway that, like, the Cobain family has now become, like, the chemtrails of the rock music world.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's craziness.
Mm-hmm.
It's craziness.
It really is.
And these stories have gotten built up over time about, you know, what's been going on and who did what and what.
Yeah, these are, like, two people. Who are stirring this whole thing up. And let me say one thing. And I do not address these people. I don't respond and I don't engage. And I will simply say this. That before anyone saw one frame of this movie.
Yeah.
Those people had put out a sort of total like deconstruction of how this film was. There's some agenda on this film or something. This is before anyone had seen a frame.
Right, right.
And that tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy town.
Yeah, but it's all right, man. I'm not really. I don't want to engage. They can have whatever.
Sure.
Go do your thing, sure. Man. I have nothing to do with it.
Well, let's talk about this movie a little bit because I saw it last night. I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you.
I think you did a really good job, and you definitely captured something that a lot of people haven't been able to capture or have not been willing to capture in other documentaries about Nirvana and about Kurt Cobain. I mean. For the simple fact that you felt necessary to capture the person as a person instead of a legend or a myth, is what I kind of gathered from it.
Yeah, but again, it was like if the legend was—I mean, if what I found was completely in sync with the legend, then that's what the film would have been.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like so. Right. I was saying, like, I wasn't. There was no. myth that when it was assembled, I realized, yeah, it was going to debunk some myths. I realized that the second Wendy Cobain showed me the home movies,
right,
of Kurt's childhood, that yeah. They weren't syncing up with Kurt's representation of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why you? Why you? How did you get brought into this?
Into doing this? Because movie? I had done a movie called The Kid Stays in the Picture.
Right.
And it was a very celebrated film, mainly for its use of photo animation. And it was a very unorthodox documentary. And as Courtney says, you know, she has bad taste in men, but good taste in filmmakers. And, you know, she loved the movie and thought I would be the right guy. And, you know, there was a point where, you know, if you want to say anything, you could almost say I betrayed her. In the sense, she brought me in, and then I said, you can't be involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she never pushed back.
Yeah.
Not for a second.
She trusted you.
She trusted me implicitly.
Yeah.
And, you know, but if I needed to abuse that, I don't want to say abuse, I never made any promises to her.
Right.
So if the film was going to take me somewhere, I was going to go there. And I feel like I didn't think when I showed her the film the first time she was going to like it. I thought she was going to freaking freak out.
Right.
You know? That's why when some woman said to me last night something about, like, Courtney or something, you know, seems like this film is Courtney's agenda. I was like, what are you? Are you crazy? Like, how would you arrive at that through what you just saw? Other than you are just basically, why did you even bother seeing the film?
Yeah.
Because clearly were going to say that regardless of what you saw.
Yeah, and I heard about that.
Yeah, too much. I don't want to make too much of it. Okay, it was one person.
Sure.
And it was someone who's been doing this for 25 years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we're giving her way too much ink.
I take it you've talked about it more than just once today.
No, not really, but it's just, it's so unnecessary. It's like one person.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I mean, did you have an idea that that kind of stuff was going to happen, though?
In Seattle?
Well, not even just Seattle, but everywhere. I mean, you know, Nirvana and Kurt Cobain, yeah, people feel it's not ownership over it.
Yeah, but you know, everywhere I go around the world, people have, you know, been embracing this movie unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life, man.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything like this. Yeah. I mean, imagine this, a film on Kurt Cobain that's done in this style that has a 97% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
That's shocking.
Yeah,
I would never have anticipated that.
Yeah,
I was figured this film would polarize people, just for if nothing else for the aesthetic reasons.
Are you happy with that?
I mean, is that a real question? Am I happy that people like the movie? Yeah, I'm happy, but I'm not going to go drink any champagne.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, yes, I'm thrilled that people are having emotional experiences in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I took that to heart with what you said last night before the opening of the. The first screen, for lack of a better term, that I definitely didn't feel like going to have a drink after that.
I mean, man.
It's heavy.
It is, and heavy, it's heavy awkward stuff. To be up there after a movie because I know half the people don't even, you're just stunned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't, you know, and I would be too. It's just like, I don't know why we do Q&As after this film. I don't think I should. You know, it's just, I do because I want to make myself accessible.
Right.
But I don't know who really wants to, like, you know, you need a little bit, you need some time to process, I think, when the movie's over.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that as a deterrent because I think it's an enriching experience. And particularly in the cinema, I mean, I think that we just found out that the Egyptians, I think, done more pre-sales on this film than any film in their history.
Uh-huh.
And I am so thrilled that people are going to be in the cinema to watch this film and experience it as a community.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a lot more comforting than be alone at home, you know, by yourself.
Definitely. I think I probably would have had a different or more profound, you know, depression after seeing it at home by myself.
I think there's a lot of joy in this movie. It's just that when it ends, you know, it's like meeting an old friend for the first time.
Yeah.
And you realize that, why did we ever stay apart? I really like this guy.
Yeah.
And at the moment you have that recognition, it's gone.
Right.
And you realize that's it.
I'm so happy Cause today from my friends are in my head. I'm so ugly. That's okay, cause so are
you. Know, Nirvana had a huge impact on a lot of people's lives, and I think especially up here in the Northwest. People felt connected to Kurt Cobain, and you know, we talked about that a little bit. And this film kind of, you know, illustrates that a lot, especially with, like, the Q&A that he did do after the movie. Even though I wasn't there, I heard a lot about it. And there were some things, man, there were some things that came out of that Q&A that were a little crazy. Yeah, I mean, I had a connection with Kurt Cobain. I was fairly young when he died. I mean, 15 years old or something like that. I remember exactly where I was when he died, when the news came out that he had committed suicide. I know exactly where I was. I know what time of year it was. And I remember the feeling, man, of just like loss, just total and utter loss for somebody that I had never even met. And it was strange. It was very strange. But I just wanted to come in here and interject in that before we go to our next musical break. I hope you're enjoying the interview with Brett Morgan, director of Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck, which you can find on HBO on Monday, May 4th at 9 p.m. And then it's going to be on HBO Go, of course, and you can find it, you know, anytime you like. So remember that. Okay. You can also find it on Facebook. Just type it into the search bar there and see where it's playing around the country. Okay? Yeah, do that. All right. Let's go with our second musical break. This is Lithium by Nirvana, and we'll be back with more of our interview with Brett Morgan, the director of Kurt Cobain, Montage of Heck. Lithium, Nirvana. Be right back.
I'm so lonely, that's okay, shave my head, and I'm not sad, and just maybe I'm to blame for all I've heard, and I'm not sure, I'm so excited, I can't wait to meet you there, and I don't care, I'm so horny, that's okay.
Like for 12 hours a day, every day of the week.
Yeah. Am I going down a path? That
not
you,
at all. No, I like talking down? To you. I'm okay, just telling okay. you. I was sitting here. I was like, dude, you gotta like marvel for a second.
I do.
Like
I do.
12 hours a day, all yeah. over the world.
See, these are not the and these.
And your questions are fine. It's you're no, not. No, no, I'm no. not getting emotional at all no, talking no, no. to you. Let I'm me, just like me, thinking to myself.
I like this path because no. I do not do these types of interviews.
Normally. Yeah, you're doing fine, man. I'm just saying
and,
it's like
and I was nervous about this because. Because press, this would be what I would consider kind of like a press junket,
yeah,
kind of situation.
You mean know? Me hold up in a hotel for 12 yeah. hours since 5:30 yeah. in the morning
and
answering
it sucks.
Questions?
It sucks.
I don't
for
mind.
You.
No, no, it doesn't. No, what?
How you know, can
what,
can it
I
not
tell you something?
Be?
I'll tell you, dude. Here's the thing. I was in Spain.
Uh huh.
Like 2 weeks. I don't know when it was. I really don't even know when it was anymore. That's how screwed up I am.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
I was in Spain, and I was exhausted. I had yeah. just come off weeks of months of doing press, and I had they worked me hard in the UK, like brute, like just all day, every day. And I got to Spain, I was just done. I just didn't want to, like, and I had to do these press days there.
Yeah.
And then I remembered I was kind of a dick to a couple journalists. Like, I just wasn't.
Was it getting later in the day? Like,
no, I just was like so tired of like, so how did you get involved?
Sure, sure.
And then I realized that's not fair. Like, I may be at the end of my road.
Sure.
But they just walked into this fresh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to be a professional and give each person the same energy. Like, I can't come into this, like, as this, you know, fuck you, man. I've answered that question 1,000 times. Give me something fresh.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair to the person. You just walked in the room. So in a sense, I feel like it's my responsibility to give you my all.
No, I want you to be real, dude.
I don't know any other way to do it.
Yeah,
you know, they told me this morning I had to get on the on a radio tour at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I think one of the PR people said to me last night, well, you know, just go into autopilot, you know, and just say the same thing. I can't do that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not who I am.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's not really who I am either. And I was just picturing myself like having to work on something like that. And how I would have to, at some point, detach from the source material.
When the film's over, when look, I want to promote this film.
Well, right.
I want people to see this film.
Yeah.
I particularly came to Seattle because I want them to see it in a movie theater.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm here. You know,
it was like a rock show last night, man. It was so
well.
Great.
I mean, to me, you know, we're open theatrically at what 4 o'clock today, and literally, if. I know it's Seattle, but if we weren't opening here, I wouldn't have come up
Wait
here.
Wait a minute. You got to go to that thing tonight, too, huh?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm psyched. It's not like, dude, I would prefer to do Q&As here all week. I have to
have
go to
LA. Have
you
gotten to talk to your kids today?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
That stinks.
It does. I didn't talk to them yesterday either. 12, 10, and 7.
Oh, my God.
I saw them at the... you know it's something terrible, man? They flew to New York. I was in Europe for a month. And yeah. So they met me in New York last weekend. Because we're from New York originally, and I never saw my daughter. She flew to New York. I never saw her. Okay, I saw her at the LA premiere the other day.
Yeah,
I didn't even go home.
Yeah,
they met me at the theater, you know, and like you know, like dude, you wanted me to fucking cry, I'll start crying because it's terrible, man.
I know.
It's fucking terrible, and it's like it's fucking up my family, and it sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
I've
and
got
like,
two small daughters myself. I can't even imagine being away from them that long.
I mean, I just saw my wife called. I haven't had a chance to call her back.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, but I as I said to her at 2 a.m. last night.
You're going to make me cry.
We're almost there. We're almost there. You know what I mean? Like, and I've yet to turn down an interview. And I feel like it's, you know, I need to, you know, be accountable for what I did. And I mean that in the most positive sense of the word. Like, I want people to, like, throw it at me. Because I thought a lot about this movie.
Sure.
A lot of thought went into every decision, no matter how minute. You know, every piece of grain is accounted for.
Yeah.
You know, and all of that photo animation in the film, I'm telling you, dude, I could tell you if that's 3% grain, 3.5% grain, or 4% grain.
Yeah.
And how much smudge was thrown in. I could tell you every corner of every frame, what the source was, how much we paid for it, everything. You know, I produced, wrote, directed, and was, you know, on this project as an editor longer than anyone else.
Yeah. 8 years, right?
Yeah, and, you know, built the sound design, and, you know, when, you know, we were mixing the film with these great mixers, but I just felt they weren't, at a certain point, I was fighting them too much, so I, you know, after Sundance, went and remixed the movie myself. You know, like, I'm very intimate with this material, which is why I'm like, ask me anything you want, man. I mean, you could ask me the hardest fucking, there's nothing, I mean, I don't know what there is, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
where, okay, well, let me ask you a question then. About the film.
Mm-hmm.
Why no Dave Grohl? Why no Chad Channing?
Oh, I love you for asking about Chad. You know, you are the first person. Here, you can pat yourself on the back. Because I know you didn't want to come in and ask me.
Ashley just gave me two thumbs up.
Yeah. I know, but see, you kind of fucked up. Because what would have been so cool is you just asked me about Chad. But you had to throw Dave in there. Because I want to have a shirt that I can open up and go, and yeah. It says, "What about Chad?"
Right.
Is everyone?
Well, Chad's never in any of the documentaries. He never gets talked about. I mean, it's not.
You saw the movie. It's not a movie about Nirvana. If it was, certainly. Chad and Dave needed to be in the film. But here's this. I'm just going to ask you this, and I will answer your question if you want. But let me ask you this, okay?
Right.
Did you feel that there was something about Kurt that you were hoping to hear Dave discuss?
No.
Reflect. Well, no. That answers the question.
No. But there's a lot of video. This is why I asked the question, is that there's a lot of video.
Yeah, Dave's in the movie.
Well, not Dave, Chad.
Oh, Chad.
There's a lot of video of Chad in the movie and playing with Chad and stuff. And I thought, you know, he was around but early on in the life, but
it's not, you know. It's not about Nirvana.
Well, I know that.
Chris could handle it, and right. I wanted as few people as possible because I wanted to have I wanted the film to feel intimate.
Yes.
And if I threw in like 10 people, wouldn't it feel as intimate as it does? Part of what makes this film feel intimate are those interviews.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about Chris Novoselic.
Right.
That's about as intimate as it gets. Think about Don Cobain.
Yeah.
The interviews are so intimate. And that would not be the case if I threw in all the people who participated in Nirvana, and then where do you stop? Then I throw in
I throw in
the producers and the road managers, and suddenly you're dealing with a film that's completely different. And every second with another person would take you away from Kurt and his experience. So I wanted just the minimum amount of interviews that would help contextualize Kurt's experience.
Sure, sure. I like that. I like that. It makes sense. And another thing that makes it so intimate is all of the diary entries and things of a more visual nature that go on in that movie too, which I thought was made for a really profound experience because you're actually reading it verbatim from his journals.
Yeah, it's that was a challenge, you know, trying to figure out how do you make that so it's not like you're just sitting there reading, like, you know, like a Ken Burns thing or something.
Right,
that
right.
It was kinetic.
Yeah.
It was, you know, was adapting a journal for cinema.
Yeah.
You know, and then finding what that looks like and feels like. And, you know, as I think I said earlier in this film, I mean, in this interview that, you know, someone asked me, they asked me all the time if Kurt's the last rock star. And I'm like, that's a ridiculous question. Of course he's not the last rock star. I mean, that's just so fucking lame. But I do think we could say he's the last analog rock star.
I heard you say that earlier today.
Oh, my God. Am I just a fucking... am I just... Where did I say on the radio? Well, yeah. Okay, man. I can't, like...
No, I mean, come on. I was going to...
Dude, don't call me out, like, for being a fucking cliche. I mean, come on, dude. I do need, like, to take a break. My brain needs to relax for a second and go into autopilot, apparently.
I
think it's a valid point because that was the aesthetic of the film. The aesthetic we were going
for. What I was going to say is that I appreciated that you said that earlier. So,
was that the radio interview this morning?
I think it was.
Was it the main rock station or the indie rock station?
The indie rock station.
That was a good interview.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, I got kind of emotional.
How was this one?
This is good, man. It doesn't feel tired.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, Brett Morgan, thank you so much for taking
my pleasure.
Time, and I hope you get to talk to your family tonight.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. Why were you talking about us? My wife's very private.
Yeah. Well, we didn't mention any names or anything.
No, I know,
like that,
I know. So, I mean, in fact, the other day, I my kids, you know, showed up at the premiere.
Uh-huh.
And we took this picture on the red carpet. It's such a cute picture, man. And I was like, I looked around and I was like, I've never tweeted or made mention of my children at any point ever. In fact, I feel like that is absolutely my Twitter account is for work.
Sure.
And it's a way for me to connect with people who want to know about my work. But the picture was so cute. I'm like, I don't know who I'm tweeting this to. But I just love this picture, you know? And she did say, she was like, okay, fine. And, you know, I was like...
this one time.
Dude, I got to show you this picture, man. It's so cute.
I want to see it. Brett Morgan, thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's so cute.
Well, that turned out okay, right? Didn't it turn out okay? I think it did. I had a great time talking with the guy. We were able to share some photos of our children with each other once the interview was over. And he was a great dude. He was a great dude, very smart dude, very, very emotionally involved in his work, which I can definitely appreciate. And also, just fried, man. Like I totally get it. Like I was kind of judging Robert Downey Jr. Back to this thing we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, press junkets, right? I was judging Robert Downey Jr. for being a dick, but now, I mean, after doing that for like 12 hours, even just being the interviewer in that situation is like, it's not the greatest. Press junkets are not the greatest. And for that reason alone, that will probably be one of the last ones that we ever do, unless we get offered something that's really, really awesome. Well, thanks for listening, folks. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Always helps out in the long run. Just takes a couple seconds. Just give us a nice 5-star review there. We are also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps. You can download to your smartphone or just visit us at air-raid.net and subscribe directly to our RSS feed and access our archives tab right there at the website. To check out all 245 episodes, man. 5 years. 5 years of doing this show. There's a lot of stuff there for you. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet. Or email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, people. Take the pledge to tell someone about the show. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take cousins, folks. Yeah. Or just sign them right up for the show. Even though they don't know what it is, because they'll thank you in the end, right? This is a fantastic, fantastic show, man. They'll love it. They'll love it anyway. Our inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 3.5-year-old, is going to be a special one this week, folks. It's a quote that I found from Kurt Cobain, as said by my 3.5-year-old daughter. So here you go.
The duty of youth is to challenge corruption. I don't know that word.
Yeah, I know. Apt quote of the week, folks. Apt quote of the week, right? Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. I don't know. I think these inspirational quotes are actually helping me be a better man, right? Because I have to listen to them over and over again. I got to edit these things together. So, yeah, I need to start practicing what my 3.5-year-old is preaching, I think. Okay, we're going to close out the episode this week with the song... The Man Who Sold the World, cover by Nirvana. Okay, thank you so much for listening this week, everyone. This is The Man Who Sold the World. We'll be back next week. See you then.
We passed upon the stair. Spoken walls and well. Although I wasn't there. Said I was a friend. Came as a surprise. I spoke into his eyes. I thought you died alone, a long, long time ago. Oh no, not me. We never lost control. The face to face. Thank you.
years and years I roamed. I gazed, I gazed, I stared.